Given so extraordinary a constellation of cognitive talents and deficits, Berlugi and others started to explore what their cerebral basis might be. Brain imaging, along with, more rarely, autopsy reports, revealed remarkable divergences from the normal. The brains of people with Williams syndrome were, on average, 20% smaller than normal brains, and their shape was quite unusual, for the decrease in size and weight seemed to be exclusively at the back of the brain, in the occipital and parietal lobes, whereas the temporal lobes were of normal and sometimes supernormal size. This corresponded with what had been so clear in the uneven cognitive abilities of those with Williams. The devastating impairments of visuospatial sense could be attributed to the underdevelopment of parietal and occipital areas, while the strong auditory, verbal, and musical abilities could, in general terms, be attributed to the large size and rich neuronal networks of the temporal lobes. The primary auditory cortex was larger in people with Williams syndrome, and there seemed to be significant changes in the planum temporale, a structure known to be crucial for the perception of both speech and music, as well as for absolute pitch. Finally, Levitin, Berlugi and others turned to investigating the functional correlates of musicality in Williams syndrome. Were the musicality and the emotional response to music in those with Williams syndrome, they wondered, subserved by the same sort of neurofunctional architecture as that in normal subjects or in professional musicians? They played a variety of music, from Bach cantatas to Strauss waltzes, to all three groups, and it was evident from brain imaging that people with Williams syndrome processed the music very differently from the others. They employed a much wider set of neural structures to perceive and respond to music, including regions of the cerebellum, brainstem, and amygdala, which are scarcely activated at all in normal subjects. This very extensive brain activation, particularly of the amygdala, seemed to go with their almost helpless attraction to music, and their sometimes overwhelming emotional reactions to it. All of these studies, Berlugi feels, suggest that the brains of Williams syndrome individuals are organized differently from normals at both a macro and a micro level. The very distinctive mental and emotional characteristics of people with Williams syndrome are reflected very precisely and beautifully in the peculiarities of their brains. Though this study of the neural basis of Williams syndrome is far from complete, it has nonetheless already made possible the most extensive correlation ever made between a multitude of mental and behavioral characteristics and their cerebral basis. In people with Williams syndrome, it is now known, there is a microdeletion of 15 to 25 genes on one chromosome. The deletion of this tiny gene cluster, less than a thousandth part of the 25,000 or so genes in the human genome, is responsible for all of the features of Williams syndrome, the abnormalities of the heart and blood vessels, which have insufficient elastin, the unusual facial and bony features, and, not least, the unusual development of the brain, so well developed in some ways, so underdeveloped in others, which underlies the unique cognitive and personality profile of those with Williams. Most recent research has suggested differentiation within this gene cluster, but the most tantalizing part of the puzzle still eludes us. We think we know which genes are responsible for some of the cognitive deficits of Williams syndrome, such as the lack of visuospatial sense, but we do not know how such a deletion of genes can give rise to the special gifts of people with Williams syndrome. It is not even certain that these have a direct genetic basis. It is possible, for example, that some of these skills are simply spared by the vicissitudes of brain development in Williams syndrome, or that they may arise as a sort of compensation for the relative lack of other functions. Freud once wrote, "Anatomy is destiny." Now we tend to think that destiny is written in our genes. Certainly, Williams syndrome affords an extraordinarily rich and precise view of how a particular genetic endowment can shape the anatomy of a brain, and how this, in turn, will shape particular cognitive strengths and weaknesses, personality traits, and perhaps even creativity. And yet, beneath the superficial similarities among people with Williams syndrome, there is an individuality that, as with us all, is largely determined by experience.